Looking for work, better pay, better work environment? We can help. Call Kelly Jobs today at 502-425-7131 to speak with a recruiter today. Score a better job with us. Call 502-425-7131 or visit kellyjobs.com. That's kellyjobs.com.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
More V-Show with Bob Valvano is now, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
All right, it's not so cold today, so it's not so illogical to be taking a look ahead to the upcoming season. Our friends have been great partners of ours for many years here at ESPN Louisville, the Louisville Bats. Get ready to start their season, their spring training right around the corner, and they get some interesting news, and we're going to visit with a guy who has won over 1,800 games, closing in on 1,900 games in his 30-plus years as a minor league manager. Pat Kelly is going to join us a little bit, and we'll talk a lot to talk about with him, because not only you want to hear a little bit about what's going on with his team and the organization, but just in general, all these new rule changes, like some of them I don't even understand, for example, and I want to ask him, because that's his job to know, so hopefully he will know. Like, I'm listening to an old-time baseball game. Chuck Tanner, I think, is managing. I coincidentally, incidentally enough, in Pittsburgh for this game I'm listening to. It's the ninth inning. The game is tied. The other team has the bases loaded with nobody out. And so let me set the rest of the scene up with Pat, and I'll ask him that first before more talk about the Bats. Pat Kelly, I just gave the introduction to. Closing down 1,900 games won in the minor leagues. He's had a very long and distinguished career there. But maybe I'll start with that question. Pat, thanks for joining us again. Good to catch up with you. Have you ever had a year going into it where there is so much change in the game itself as this one?
No. I mean, I think the game has changed the way we utilize rosters and everything. But then you add on that the injuries that they had in Cincinnati, and I mean, it was incredible. We had over 270 transactions, over 95 players, 24 major league rehab guys, just incredible.
Well, I'm talking, in addition to that, and that is well documented, of course, I'm talking about the changes to the game. Like, I was listening, one of my hobbies, I listen to old-time games on the radio, and I think Chuck Tanner was managing, if I'm not mistaken. And the game that I'm listening to is in the ninth inning, bottom of the ninth inning, and the game is tied, and his team is in the field, and the other team has the bases loaded and nobody out. And so he does what you used to see managers do somewhat regularly in that situation. He brings in a fifth infielder. Could you do that now with the rules on the shift? Are you still going to be allowed to bring a fifth infielder in? Because where would you put him? I mean, you're not allowed to have three guys on one side of the base, right? So how could you do it?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I like playing the five-man infield in that situation, because you're really up against it. I thought the rule read that you had to have two on each side. So I would think the third could do that, but that's a great question. I'll have to ask the umpires in spring training, because unfortunately, when you're on the road, that's sometimes your best defense in the top of the ninth.
Yeah. Again, we'll get to your team and the Reds, but while we're on this topic, let's talk about some of the other things. My understanding is there are going to be two different ways to use the computer for the balls and strikes at home plate. Which one is your league going to use? Do you know? Obviously you do. What is it?
The last we were told is that we would use a combination of both. So we would play a certain amount of games with the total robo umpire, and then we would play a certain amount of games with a challenge system. There was some talk about, because we play six-game series, maybe the first three being with the robo-umpires, and then the last three of the series would be under the challenge system. So I don't think it's been finalized, but it looks like we're going to use both.
Do you have a preference for one over the other?
Well, I've never experienced either one, but in talking to other managers, they like the challenge system a lot better, because The umpires are actually making the calls. The challenge cannot come from the dugout. It has to be from either the hitter or the pitcher or the catcher. And you're only allowed three challenges the whole game. So it seems to go over really well. It happens right away. It happens quickly. In the fall league, they were actually putting it up on the scoreboard, so kind of like they do in tennis. And the crowd kind of gets into it a little bit. So it sounds like that's the better of the two. The robo-umpire I've never experienced. I've just seen videos, and some of it's not good. So we'll have to see.
Pat Kelly, the manager of the Louisville Bats, talking about some of the changes that they'll be witnessing and experiencing in baseball this coming year. I like a lot of them. I think it's good for the game. We'll see how the computer umpiring system works the best. And like everything else that's new, people will have to adjust, but I think they will going forward. We'll see. But let's talk about your team. In the midst of all of that chaotic manpower stuff going on last year, every time you turned around, there was somebody getting rehabbed, or, I mean, you talked about a 200 and whatever it was transactions, which is just crazy. What are you looking at in terms of, has this offseason done anything to stabilize things, or are you looking at having? I know it's part of coaching in the minor leagues; you got to be very flexible. But that was a crazy number of transactions last year. What do you think this year is going to shape up to be?
Well, it all depends on the health of the major league team. Obviously, they had a lot of injuries last year, but they're going to get a lot of their guys back. They're going to be healthy. And then we're going to have some young prospects. And I think a lot of times as an organization, you don't want to mess with those guys too much. So I think the combination of them being healthy at the major league level, us having young prospects, should stabilize things. And we've got some good young players coming. So for me, it's a really exciting time because this is the future of the Reds coming through Louisville the next couple of years.
Well, one guy who's on the top of every offseason list of terrific prospects is Ellie De La Cruz. What do you think the plans are for him this year? Because that's what every article says, kind of what you were talking about. He's such a special prospect. You really don't want to take a misstep at this stage of his career in terms of playing at the right level, you know, not too high, not too low, not too fast, not too slow. So what do you think is going to be the path for him?
Well, that's a great question. I think the organization has a plan. Obviously, it's above my pay grade, and they don't always discuss it with me until we break camp. But I would think he would spend a majority of the time with us this summer. He only spent 2 months in Double-A, so he may need a little more time there. But he had an excellent year in the Dominican playing winter ball, which the competition is very high, a lot of major league players. So he held his own there, and I think we'll see him a lot in Louisville, if not for the whole season. And what an exciting player. I mean, 6'5", shortstop, switch hitter with power, who can run. I mean, he stole 50 bases last year. He hit 30 home runs. Just an incredible athlete, and he has that it factor. I mean, there's just something about he's always got a smile on his face. He enjoys playing the game, and I just think he's very special.
Another guy who's widely written about in this offseason, and forgive me because I don't know, I know he's played spent a lot of time at the major league level for the Reds, but I'm curious, he's older than obviously De La Cruz is. De La Cruz is just 21. The guy I'm talking about is Spencer Steer, who's currently, he's 25 now, I believe, corner outfielder, and very high, people are very high on this guy as well, and I'm not sure you'll get him at all this year. From what I'm reading, he may wind up opening the season as their third baseman. I don't know. What can you tell us about him?
I would think he'd have a very good chance to be the starting third baseman in Cincinnati. We acquired him in a trade in July. He was actually playing for St. Paul in the Twins organization. And then he played for us a little over a month before he went up to Cincinnati. And just a really good ball player. I mean, kind of a throwback guy. You know, nothing flashy, nothing special, just hits line drives all over the ballpark, plays solid defense, can play second, can play third, can fill in the outfield, played some first base in Cincinnati, actually. So very, very good ball player, and I think he's going to fit in really good to the organization.
All right, Pat Kelly's with us here, and he's been with us before, and we're delighted to have him with us. But I just... I don't know if I have this right. Were you, again, I'm going, I'm not sure this is your bio. Where were you born? That's what I'm trying to ask you.
I was born in Santa Maria, California.
Okay. All right. So I'm trying to get your sports affiliation. So because I want to see if I can cajole a Super Bowl pick out of you. But you weren't born anywhere near Philadelphia or Kansas City, so you don't even have a dog in the fight, do you?
No, but I like Kansas City. You know, they got a baseball player playing quarterback, so. You know, I got to root for him.
Yeah, you must know. His dad is the Pat Mahomes, right? So did you know him? You must have known him, right?
Yeah, I know Pat. I actually managed against him and actually scouted him a little bit when I was doing some pro scouting. So I know Pat, and obviously it's fun to watch his son play.
All right, so we'll put you down. We're keeping track all week as one vote, Kansas City. All right, there we go. You're in the books, Pat. Hey, I look forward to the season and hopefully catching up and seeing you in person. And best of luck putting your roster together, and hopefully we win some games this year. We appreciate the time.
Well, I appreciate it, and we got your seat in the dugout waiting for you.
Oh, I love that night. I'll be happy to do that again. It was, and so I'm not mistaken, we won that game.
We did win. That's why I want you to come back.
Yeah, I'm 1-0 as the official Louisville Bats dugout sitter. There's DHs. I'm a DS. Whatever works. All right, Skip. Take care of yourself. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right, Pat Kelly, he's one of the good guys. Nice guy indeed. Yeah, sat in the dugout. It's a fascinating experience if you've never, you know, I played soccer, basketball, and golf, and I played Little League. I mean, that's the highest level of organized baseball I ever played. So that's all foreign to me, and every game has a different, I've always said that, the different mindsets of the games is astounding to me. Like, if you play soccer, I'd never played. I imagine it's probably still true. I've never seen a team where players openly show how pissed off they are at their teammates more than soccer. It's unbelievable. You know, you got,
oh, man, that is the truth.
Going, I mean, you got a counterattack going. A guy's busting his ass to get out there on the wing, and the guy in the middle takes a 35-yard shot, puts it 20 feet over the goalie's head and over the end line, and the guy in the wing just at that moment throws his hands over his head and starts screaming at the guy in a language that might be different from the guy he's mad at. But it's fascinating to just utter disdain for each other. Basketball players are a different breed. They are they'll get frustrated with their teammates, but often for different things that are not necessarily related just to that. That most of them have the decency, if you are being overlooked in the offense, to wait till you get into the huddle at the timeout, and then you threaten to kill the guy.
But that's my sporting of you.
They don't generally do it on the floor as much, but they're fragile relationships sometimes as well. But usually they will show open disdain on the floor. There's some conditions that it's okay. Like if you're you know being told to go pressure the ball in the backcourt, and the other team's center comes up and sets that screen, and the guy you're guarding just takes you on a dead sprint off that screen. So you go running at the top speed, bam, into this 6'11 guy who weighs 100 pounds more than you do. Yeah, that guy will get up and kind of might mention it to the guy who was guarding that fella to say, hey, could you call pick right? Could you call, tell me where there's a screen? Don't hang me out to dry out there. But other than that, they're not as openly disdainful as the soccer guys. The golfers, if you're on a golf team, are a fascinating breed because they are, I mean, it is, after all, an individual sport at the core. And so they're kind of divas. They are kind of divas. Like, I've learned, it took me a long time to learn it. If you are playing with a serious golfer and he asks you a specific question about a certain shot or a certain hole, he really doesn't give a damn what you're saying. He just wants to use it as an excuse to tell you something about when he played that hole. So I learned that. I mean, I was glad to be on the team. I was not one of the star players, one of the the best players. So the good guys would, you know, when I first got there and they would ask me, I'd give them an answer. And I could tell 3 words into the answer, they didn't really care. They just, like, it was like, what'd you hit on 12? And I'd say, well, I was way over on the left, so I tried to, and I'm not really that good at bringing the ball. They'd, at that point, they'd already tuned out. You know, I was going, I'm not that good at bringing it right to left, so I just tried to play out to the fairway. And they've tuned you out. What they are doing is, and as they get to know you better, they don't even have a pretext anymore. They just say, what'd you hit on 12? Well, I hit, let me tell you, on my 12, damn, I could not have hit a 3-wood better. I should have been on the green, putting for an eagle, instead of hitting the damn sprinkler head. You know, the one on the right near the bunker, and it skipped off that, wound up going 20 yards over the green, I was behind a tree. I was lucky as hell to say par from there. I hit a beautiful shot under the tree, rolled it up the fringe, got at that point. So what I'd start doing, as I got to know them better, is give ridiculous answers, because I knew they weren't listening. So they would say, what'd you hit on 12? I said, on 12, I didn't hit it at all. I just threw it down the fairway. And, you know, it's a long hole to do that, but I did okay. What about you?
And they give the answer. And, yeah.
What'd you hit on 9? Never got out of the cart. Just sat there and played it like polo. You know, I took an 11, but boy, I played the hole fast.
I've training a falcon, and I call him Mr. Yeah. Pinchers. And Mr. Pinchers comes down and grabs my Titleist. He only grabs my Pro V1s. That's the thing. It only works with Pro V1s, and then he flies.
Their answer's too long already. You've gone too long. You got to shorten that up. Like, sometimes I'll just say, what'd you hit on 13? I shot the other two guys. Then they just stop. You know, that's... I played the last 6 holes a lot faster, I'll tell you that. It didn't matter.
I just used my putter.
Yeah, I mean, individual sports, a different breed. And to that end, by the way, 2 notes of interest, at least of interest to me. 1, the state high school bowling championship is going on this week. And it's actually fun. If you've never got a chance, it's fun to go see. It goes over like 3 days. They have different categories based on, I think, the size of the school. And I don't know the different formats. I'd like to tell you I do, but we didn't have a bowling team when I was in high school. And so there's different, like if you watch the NCAA championships are on TV frequently in years past, and they do, I think it's called, any of my bowling friends out there can rein me in if I've marched down a road I'm screwing up, it's called the Baker format, I believe. And the Baker format is, there's 5 people on a team, and each of them bowls 2 frames, not in succession, though. So it'd be like your number 1 player in the first frame, number 2 in the second, number 3 in the third, number 4 in the fourth, number 5 in the fifth. Then you start over again, and the big reason the number 5 guy has the all-important 10th frame, which, as Jamie says, you know, if you do well, you get free bowling.
I like that, free bowling. That's good.
Yeah, so that, I don't know if they have that. It's more entertaining than I thought it would be, because I thought it was a little goofy at first, to be honest with you. I mean, you travel all this way, and then you're only bowling 2 frames in a game. I mean, it was, but I think it's still, to me, a little tough. I think they bowl, like, if you're playing in some sort of a head-to-head event or something, I think they play, like, 5-game series or something. So you're still only bowling 2 frames a game, and if it's 5, you're basically bowling 1 game, just spread over 5 different games. But they also have individual head-to-head, which is really compelling, to be honest, some of these young kids. Very, very big sport right now for the females. In fact, I'll give you a tip. If you have a daughter, if you can get her interested in bowling, it's a great scholarship opportunity. I always tell you, you want to get your kid a scholarship, tell them to go to the library, because there's a lot more academic money out there than there is athletic money. But if you're looking for a sports scholarship, female bowling, big at a lot of schools. I mean, and I'm not being jaded about it, I'm just telling you the truth. There are schools that have to get their sports balanced because of Title IX. I don't have a problem with that at all. So one of the sports that you can do it most economically is to offer a bowling team. And that includes, more importantly for you, the consumer, than the athletic director who's trying to do a budget, is that he's got to balance the number of scholarship opportunities. And so there's scholarship money out there if you get, you know, these girls involved. And I go all the time when I'm practicing, and I see a bunch of young women out there bowling. The form is good. They know what they're doing. So it's not easy, but it is still out there where it's approachable. So take that under account. If you want to go check it out, it's over at Kingpin this year. I think it moves around the state, and I know it's been at different houses here in Louisville, but it'd be at Kingpin. Good place to watch. There's, you know, adequate space to get behind your favorite bowlers, your kid, your grandson, your cousin, your nephew, your dog walker, whoever it is, and go watch them there. And it goes on. Go online and check it out. I think it's on the KHSAA website. I'm sure if you call them at Kingpin, they'd be happy to answer your questions. I've gone in the past. I would have gone this year, but I'm here in Pittsburgh right now, and the ACC would not move the game back so Louisville could play Pitt twice at home just so I could go to the bowling championships. But so that's what's going on. Oh, and speaking of irony, remember I said to you,
Baker? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, yeah, Baker system of bowling scoring system. But the other thing is, I still subscribe electronically to Newsday, which is the Long Island newspaper. I like to see, you know, what's going on in my old hometowns and things, and as importantly to me, see what's going on with a lot of the teams. It's amazing. I still know a lot of the people. I mean, it's been a long damn time. It's been 40-some-odd years, but there's still some of the familiar names, and sometimes it's the kids of the people I played with or against, and I told you we didn't have a bowling team at Seaford. Well, I just checked yesterday's Newsday, and not only do they have a bowling team, they were the county champions. I think they were last year, and I think they're trying to defend their championship this year. So, but that's the other point I wanted to make. I found this really interesting and fascinating. I think there's a take in there somewhere, but I don't know what it is. And here's what I mean. If you picked up Newsday when I was in high school, I mean, you got the standard sports. You got, you know, there's so many pro teams. A lot of it was made up of pro teams, but even the ones that were not the pro teams, it was the, for lack of a better word, mainstream sports. You know, you had football, basketball, baseball. Women played softball, you know, so the softball was in there. Wrestling is big on Long Island, so they had wrestling. Lacrosse is big on Long Island, so they had that, and those are not always featured in other cities, but that was basically it. I mean, they had swimming teams, but I know St. X is involved in, their last meet or something before the states, and I know they've had a great swimming team. I don't remember swimming getting very much coverage at all, and that was basically it. Occasionally, amateur golf would get in there. I mean, they followed the pro tour, but amateur golf was big. There's a lot of golf courses on Long Island, an incredible number of courses, public and private, for such a small amount of land. But I picked up the paper now, and I guess there aren't that many more team sports you could have, so it makes sense that it's individual sports, but they have in high schools now, and they're competing for chances to go to the state championship. There was badminton, fencing, high school fencing. Didn't even know that high schools had fencing. Does anybody in Louisville have a fencing team? I don't think they do.
I've wanted to try that. I've heard it's a terrific workout.
I was just going to say, the guy I used to work with at ESPN was, you know, like in the seniors. I don't mean seniors like 70s and 80s, but still like in his 50s or 40s or whatever. And he fenced all the time. And he would say the same thing. He would say, you have no idea what a workout it is. And he was encouraging everybody to try it. I've never tried it. I would like to, but I never have. And I don't know at this stage of my life. Maybe the train's already left the station. I don't know. But the point is, they're all individual sports, which I don't know if it says anything about how the kids exist in the educational system, because I guess there's more people being homeschooled, and I guess it's easier to be they have affiliations, many of the homeschooled kids, so they can participate in teams, and you know, you can participate in a team without really having much to do with the other kids, to be honest with you, if you're on an individual sport. So they had fencing, they had badminton, bowling. As I said, we didn't even have a bowling team, and now school wins the county championship. But I don't know what that says, whether it's a budgetary thing. On the one hand, I think it's not as expensive. Then on the other, I think, well, hell, it's an individual sport. It's very expensive. I mean, you're on the hook for all the equipment yourself, probably. And, like, if you're going to be serious about any one of those sports, the people who manufacture the things of that sport are more than happy to take your money. So, and I'm not knocking it, but I mean, people come to they're not recreational in the sense that the people are not good at it, but these, for lack of a better word, recreational leagues, the bowling leagues, there are people, hell, I'm one of them. I've got six bowling balls right now. I mean, you know, and they're not that cheap. Not if you're getting ones that, you know, are the, not just the house plastic balls that they have at the lanes, but other ones, you know, and shoes and bag and everything else. So I don't know whether that's what it says. People like, well, if I'm going to spend money, I'm spending it on my kid, not on the team, or whether it's just simply that we've become that way now, that we no longer, I mean, soccer, I still go through that here a little bit. You talk about soccer, and for some reason, people are all offended at it. You know, and I remember at the time, which I think was a bad marketing ploy by soccer, I think it set them back a bunch of years in this country, is they were talking about the soccer boom. It was coming. You're probably not even old enough to remember that. And there was some reason to think it was going to be popular. The New York Cosmos, which were the team of the professional league in this country before it turned into what it is now, it was the North American Soccer League, which I think still exists now as a minor league, if I'm not mistaken. But it was a big deal. I mean, as I've told the story on the air a couple of times, that in college where I was playing soccer, so it wasn't that long a drive from Virginia Beach, where my school was, to New Jersey. You know, it wasn't short, but it was 5 hours maybe to go see the Cosmos play, where they played at Giant Stadium, where the New York football Giants play. The game I went to was 66,000 there, 66,000 fans. And they had Pele, and they had my guy Shep Messing and Giorgio Chinaglia, Franz Beckenbauer. If you're a soccer fan, these names are big. Carlos Alberto, Ricky Davis, these guys were the best players from the U.S. and around the world. And so it was a big deal. But the problem is they kept saying, here we come. You know, we're going to overtake baseball. And even people who don't like baseball, like in markets like this where it's not super, super popular, got offended at that. Like, easy, pal. You know, we've been playing baseball in this country at the professional level at that time for 100 years. Now it's 150 years. You guys are just going to waltz in and think that you're going to take it over. You know how, frankly, we are as Americans. It's, you know, slow your roll, everybody. But the problem is people dug their heels in against it until, like, a city like ours gets the, you know, Louisville City FC. And I've told this before, and yeah, I will, you know, dislocate my shoulder patting myself on the back. But I said, this has a real chance to be some good here. And oh, my God, I was mocked even by the people at our station talking soccer. Now we have the rights to the games. So we're proud to have them. And you watch, it's not, you know, they're not going to get 66,000, but they're getting a good five-figure crowd there that's pretty enthused about it. And so the world just changes, man. I mean, that's the way it is. But I remember that there were a number of sports that were much more regional in nature. And then everything became so easy. You could be a San Diego Padres fan living in Ames, Iowa, and do it pretty easily with the internet and just the MLB app and the you know, watching the games. You could be a fan of just about anybody in the world now and not have to live within 500 miles of that team. So that was not the case then. So, you know, you tended to kind of follow the teams that were in your backyard. And then, as it became more palpable for you to, more viable for you to root for, and they found out there was money in it, which is always the deciding factor. I mean, NBC Sports Network has struggled, but the one thing they found is, man, that Premier League is a pretty valuable property to have in this country. People watch it and pay attention to it. And so, and that's always, if tiddlywinks were that way, you know, that remember poker became the thing. All of a sudden, televised poker, you couldn't swing a dead cat without watching a televised poker match from somewhere. So that's kind of what the reality is. But now I think it's gone so far that that's part of the problem. They're trying to be all things to all people, and they realize that, yeah, the people, at least in Long Island, are paying attention to fencing and bowling and badminton and volleyball. I mean, so I think that's a good thing. But the irony of that, if you want to look at it that way, is this is all happening when all the newspapers are cutting their staff. So they're trying to be all things to all people with half the people they used to have, or a quarter of the people they used to have. So it was interesting to see. But the other thing, that's why I say this is, to me, a very interesting topic, and I'm not quite sure where it's headed, is you used to need all those people if you were going to cover even just the major sports, because you basically had to send people there and they had to travel, and now you don't have to. So that may be part of it, too. They may be saying, hell, we can get, you know, pretty adequate coverage of everybody in Major League Baseball, everybody in the NFL, just by what you can get off wire services, and, you know, and people are going to be there. It used to be, well, the wire services, it was kind of a, not necessarily for the hardcore fan, because they couldn't really hear what the guy was saying. You know, they were kind of at the mercy of whoever was writing it, whatever they chose to put in and not put in. But now, almost every press conference these guys have are televised in their entirety. You know, and not to, by the way, real quick, not to offend our female listeners, because things like the WNBA didn't really exist. I mean, it was way, way down the priority scale. Now, I mean, it's still not, they're not going to be outdrawing the NBA teams in most of those cities. But, you know, it was a big deal when, what's her name, Breanna Stewart signed with the New York Liberty. That was a great kid. I was pretty happy about that. So, you know, it's the nature of, you better be at the forefront of the change that's coming. I mean, I always say that about Major League Baseball. They got ripped left to right and up and down because it was old, stodgy, and their demographic was way outside what you really want to have to be making money. And then the fact of the matter is they became like the leader in how they used their website. In fact, there were a couple of years. Now, this is going back a ways, so it's probably not true anymore. But there was a time in the not-too-distant past where a team like the Miami Marlins, Florida Marlins, as they were known then, they made enough money. Think about this for a second. I was astounded at this. They made enough money from their share of MLB.com to cover the entire team's payroll. I mean, and most people would have said, oh, they're. In fact, it got to the point where the other leagues, the National Hockey League and the NBA, went to the Major League Baseball people who ran their website to try and get some tips because they were so successful. So, you know, who would have thought that from old, stodgy baseball? So, you know, the times they are changing, but I always bring that up because what does that mean here? I mean, I do know that maybe, again, because of the internet, if you want to follow high school bowling here, you can. And I generally do. I know who the good teams are, and you know, it's the day I was practicing, kind of what started this year for the discussion was the day I was practicing, there was high school matches going on, and one of the kids bowled a 300, and I had the young man on the air, and they, I think they appreciated it, and I had fun with it, and so they keep me on their I don't know what they are. You can't call them email lists. Maybe it's not just email. I mean, I'm linked to them on Twitter and all the social media stuff. So I think it's great. Like, I think back, the thing I felt bad about when I went to coach in Sweden, nobody here knew what the hell what we were doing. I mean, I always felt bad about it. It's like dropping off the face of the earth. Now, you know, I mean, all European teams have websites and places you can watch the game. It was, to tell you how kind of archaic it was, and it's not that long ago. Well, it's most of your listeners. It's from probably before you were born. If you buy the demographics that are 32 or 33-year-old men of the prime listenership, this was now 40 years ago, I guess. Not quite 40, so, but still a little bit older than the demographic for our listeners would be. That we used to get, there was a subscription service in Sweden where I was coaching, and they would send you one cassette tape, I mean audio cassette, VHS tape, of an NBA game, a whole NBA game, and then highlights of the games, the other important games of the week. And man, we lived for that cassette. Now you could watch, I'm sure you know, just like we watch here, I'm sure there's a way. And we were paying for that. Now I don't even know what the fee would be. Probably not very much to just watch the games on the internet. Like, you know, there's apps on your phone. You can watch any damn NBA game you want, or hockey game, or baseball game. So very cool in a lot of ways. I prefer to look at it that way rather than lament. Well, I don't know where it's going. We're going to be talking about fencing. Well, I don't know. We'll be watching it. But you got a kid who fences, or you are a relative or something, you can follow them pretty easily when it was literally impossible to do that not that long ago. So we'll see where it goes here in Louisville and with the local media outlets. Take a break. We'll come back. We got a lot more to come. We got Neil Knuckles Greenberg is going to join us, talk a little bit about the Super Bowl coming up.
I haven't got a confirmation from him yet.
No, so he's not joining us. Well, we'll just make crap up then. We'll make
crap
up.
Busy being a dad. So maybe we'll get him later. I said he's busy being a dad.
Well, I'm a dad too, and God knows I got two that are handfuls.
Yeah, but for the most part, we're potty trained.
Fitty on that. All right. Well, we got stuff to talk about anyway. Maybe we'll get some texts. We haven't done any texts yet, so we'll do that. And then we are going to have Jeff Greer, though, damn it.
Yes, that's 250.
By hook or by crook. Yeah. And he's got kids, and he's not blowing us off.
Yeah, but his kids are potty trained, too. Jeff isn't, though.
be a part of the show. Text Bobby V on the UPS Jobs text line at 437-9680.
We start a new feature on the show, which I'm going to start right now in just a few minutes anyway. And that is, you know, we're now in February, and everybody is playing games that are big within their conference to set them up to try and win the regular season or give them a better seed in their conference tournament, and most importantly, set the landscape for March Madness. So we are going to pick every night, every single night, a win of the day, a win that's very significant. I'm sure it'll be debatable to some who will, and that's fine. Then you send a text and say, I don't see how you think that win was more significant than Podunk Tech's win over, you know, Jablonski State. That's fine. That'll be so, the fun of it.
So it's like a conference call, but it's just a one winner thing.
Yeah, that's why that made me think of it, because we had promised a conference call earlier in the week and we didn't do it, and I don't think we have time to do a whole one here. So on the nights we don't do conference calls, this will be perfect. There aren't as many games obviously on a Tuesday night as there would be on a weekend, where if we come back and do our usual conference call on Monday, kind of goes through the whole weekend and puts everything in perspective. This will be a little different, but I think it'll be fun. And you probably don't have any sound for this yet, because I didn't even tell you we were going to do it, but that'll be where we go going forward, where it won't make it so it's impossible to do it because it's so time-consuming, but it'll be a nice touch, and we'll do that in just a second. But it's not going to be any fun to listen to if you're in pain, so let's see if we can help people who are dealing with pain issues find a solution. You don't have to go through yet another year with that knee pain or back pain. People with chronic joint pain are getting real lasting relief, and you know where it's from, our friends at QC Kinetics. QC Kinetics is the nation's leader in advanced regenerative medicine. Their unique protocols use healing agents from your own body to target aching joints, repairing and restoring damaged tissue. So you can move again with no surgery, no drugs, no downtime. That's the trifecta of good news there. Got shoulder pain, excruciating hip pain, arthritis pain, maybe it's lingering pain from an injury. Any one of those things, you can get help and get real lasting relief from our friends at QC Kinetics. Don't hastily go into a decision. This is a very important decision for you and your quality of life, and you owe it to yourself, if you're dealing with pain, to talk to the good folks at QC Kinetics and find out if they can help you. It's a free consultation, so what do you got to lose? QC Kinetics has their life-changing all-natural treatments, and they can get you living your best life in the new year. I'm telling you, people are raving about these treatments. That's the future of joint pain management, and appointments are available as soon as within the next week, so don't wait a moment longer. Make 2023 the year you say goodbye to joint pain. But it can only happen if you take the first step, and that's giving them a call. See, with a free consultation, if they can help you and what it would take to have you living that year of pain-free quality. That's what you get when you talk to our friends at QC Kinetics. 502-219-4636. That's 502-219-4636. One more time, if you didn't get it, 502-219-4636, our friends at QC Kinetics. Well, I guess I'm a little bit biased because I've seen them now. I've had their games three times already this year. And had them probably eight times last year when they won the national championship. But make no mistake about it, even the coach agrees. The coach, of course, being Bill Self, and he said, you know, he's wise enough to say that there are no must-win games in February. He said, but this is about as close to a must-win game as a team could have in this early still in the season. And they got it done against the Texas team. It's been one of the – I hate to say it because Chris Beard – lost his job for serious allegations of, you know, domestic abuse, but it becomes one of the great stories of the year, because under an interim coach, this team had been playing spectacularly good basketball, and Kansas has hit a rough patch of late. They've had some injuries. They haven't played as well. Their defense has not been up to Bill's usual standards, and they've had a propensity for blowing big leads, and they almost did the same thing again last night. Number 5 Texas came to Allen Fieldhouse, and they were in a situation where they had a big lead, and then they bounced back after Texas had overtaken them to come back and win it again. And this was a very different scenario than the game they lost that we saw just the other day, when Kansas had been playing really well early in the month, then hit a bad stretch in the latter part of January, and we saw them go down at Iowa State, and Iowa State really just kind of thumped them, really just jumped on them and never let them up. And they had under par performances by basically everybody on the roster with the exception of Jalen Wilson, who's been brilliant. Well, last night, they turned it around. Grady Dick had 21 points, the outstanding freshman. They had a really good play from DeJuan Harris. And the fact of the matter is, they knew they had to get a win. Grady said, we knew we had to come in here and get a win. He had the Jayhawks only 2 3-pointers. That's been a problem. They've not shot it well. They haven't had great depth, and they haven't played great defense. That's a bad combination. But they managed to still put 88 points on the board, even though they only got 2 from downtown. And they came in knowing what they needed, and they played with a much higher level of energy. They looked a bit lethargic, out of step, out of tune, out of focus when they played Iowa State. And they bounced back, and they had a very good team effort here. Isn't it amazing how we talk about Kansas having such a down year, 19-5, 7-4? But the real reason is because they got a lot of ground to make up, and that was what Bill Self's comment was. He called it as close to a must-win as you could have this early in the season to win the league. If they had lost, they would have been down 3 games with 7 left. And then he said, you'd have to win out and get a lot of help from others. Now, we still have as hard a schedule as anybody, but we can kind of control our own destiny, where if we play well, we have a shot. So, that was an 88-point performance with only 2 3-pointers. You don't see that very often anymore. So they got it done, and they did it despite an uncharacteristically subpar day from Wilson, who had just 1 of 7, 6 rebounds, 2 assists for 2 points, and he's been obviously a tremendously important player for them. But he had a good game the other night against I don't know, I can't ever say the name, Iowa State, but they have been, he was not on his game last night, but nonetheless, they got, as we said, stepping up, Grady Dick. Harris had 17, McCullough had 16. These guys were pretty bad, to be honest with you, against Iowa State. KJ Adams had 10. They had 4 guys in double figures. They got some, they had 5 guys in double figures. Joseph Yesufu, who was not very good at Iowa State. It's kind of redundant. This guy was not that good. That guy was not that good. Well, they had 5 guys in double figures, and Wilson wasn't one of them. And they had 38-33 rebounding advantage. They wound up passing the ball very well, 16 assists in the game. They held Texas to just 6. So it was a meaningful win in front of a packed house at Allen Fieldhouse.
I've
so that is my
for
win
you
of the night.
That might amplify that. Rob Doster of the Field of 68 said that that win might have been exactly what the Jayhawks needed.
In a scoring way, but he's
no.
Not
they've been bad, and then all I had to do was face this Texas defense, and all of a sudden they found a way to get going. You could say,
but I'm just saying, if you follow your scout and
if
guys
you want to go
nuts,
spin zone on
it.
This TO, if you want to go spin zone on this, if you want to think outside the box here, a little galaxy brain, Texas just fixed Kansas.
You've seen them as much
Texas
as anybody.
Texas just what? I didn't hear.
Texas just
what
fixed
did he say?
Kansas. Texas just fixed Kansas is what he said.
He's obviously not very impressed with Texas's defense, but their overall body of work this year, pretty strong. So, that's too easily dismissed as, to me, when you don't have a deep roster, which Kansas does not, they play him through a lot of injuries. And, that's the difference right now. You want to take a look at, it may be, quote unquote, a little subpar by Kansas standards, which is a little silly when you look at the overall body of work. It's still extraordinary. But the problem is, for a team like Louisville, if they don't get either L. Ellis having a monster game or somebody else having like a career game, they're going to have a hard time. And again, nobody's equating Louisville with Kansas, but my point is, in terms of how you consider your team, this is when the backs were against the wall, everybody pitched in for Kansas. It overcame the fact that their quote-unquote L. Ellis had an off night. That says something, that they all came to the plate. Real quick, runner-up, obviously runner-up, because you could easily make a case this should have been the game that game of the night, is Miami's just undressing Duke. That was astounding, to be honest with you. Miami, people who didn't want to give them their due, 19-5 now, and they were all over Duke again, pretty much from the start. They knocked them back on their heels. Not only did they win, they won with just an absolute dominance. It wasn't one of those, let's hit a late shot and get lucky and win by a deuce or win by three. They just dominated Duke, and they now are 10. They have as many wins as anybody in the ACC. They're not in first place because Clemson has 10 wins in 13 games. Miami has 10 wins in 14 games. But they are having a monster year right now, and Clemson's not even ranked. Miami is ranked, even though they have a lower winning percentage in the conference. They've been really good, and that was a significant win. Duke now, somewhat modest, 8-5 in the league, which isn't terrible for a first-year coach with all new players. But the ACC is clearly not at the level it is most years. So there's still some somewhat heavy lifting to do for teams. Duke's not ranked. Carolina's not ranked. Wake is just down to 7-6. It's very unlikely that Syracuse or FSU or anybody from there on down will get in. So how many of them will go to the NIT if they get asked? And actually, I think you kind of have to go now since the NCAA owns it. I think there's ramifications if you're eligible and you don't go. I don't know. Could be wrong, but I think that's true. It was not true in the COVID era. There were a lot of things that were not business as usual in that stretch, but I think it might be now. But I would say the Miami win for Duke, a very close second, but Kansas gets our win of the night on the V Show on this Tuesday. All right, top of the hour. We'll take a break and we'll come back.
I got a soundbite again from our friends at Field of 68. And Rob Doster and Jeff Greer of the Field of 68 is going to join us coming up at 2:15. But first off, him and Mr. Oglesby, Terrence Oglesby, had a discussion last night after that blowout win, and they discussed if Miami, the Canes, are the best team in the ACC.
He's really, really good, but whoever decided to give Duke an at-Miami game 2 days after playing Duke UNC, that's messed up. And that is some bias in the ACC offices. And it needs to be addressed, world. It needs to be addressed. How do you do that to a team full of freshmen? It's crazy.
That never would have happened if Coach K was still there.
No, he would have called the league office immediately.
Yeah, immediately. I think this is one of those ones. What do you call them in the NBA? Schedule losses?
Yeah.
Right? Scheduled losses. That's just one of those ones where you come off of a win like you had against North Carolina. You come off of the peak of what college basketball is about when you play in the ACC and when you play in Chapel Hill, when you play on Tobacco Road. And then you have to go on the road to take on a Miami team that has kind of found their gear and is hitting their ceiling and is playing some of the best basketball that we've seen them playing this season. It's a tough ask. You know, the hardest thing, I think, about being a freshman is figuring out how to deal with the success, right? Understanding that just because you got this one big win, it doesn't mean that the next time you play, when it's on the road, in front of a packed house, in front of a bunch of Miami Marlins players were there, they're not just going to roll over, right? That is a good basketball team that had a full building that was going absolutely crazy. Jim Larranaga was out there throwing his money around. Like, it said a lot about Miami, but I think that it just kind of showcased the youth of this Duke team.
I agree with a lot of what they said. I think it does show the youth of the Duke team. I think that it's a very, very tough thing to do. It's human nature. Carolina game had them so jazzed up, and they got a big win. And they, understandably, might have come out a little flat in this one. But the rest of it, a lot of the rest of it, how about that? We'll qualify it that way. I don't agree with it all. Number one, Coach K would have called the office and changed the schedule. No. I mean, listen, nobody's got more respect for K than I do. But, I mean, Rick Pitino used to bitch about what the ACC did to him in scheduling all the time. And he had a lot of juice. He was a pretty juiceful guy. You know, nobody in the office is letting the coaches dictate the schedule. And I'll tell you why. Because two letters, T and V. That's why. They had a big Monday slot to fill. This was the game to do it. They stuck him in there because that's a game that people will watch. And that's the way it is. And if you don't like it, tell your story walking, buddy. So that's ridiculous. That's the first thing. The second thing is that almost made me laugh is how many years have we heard that the Duke people, you know, got breaks from everybody? That, you know, the officials gave him breaks. The conference gave him breaks. Everybody gave him breaks. It was Duke. It was the mighty Mike Krzyzewski. Give them all sorts of breaks. And now he's talking about, don't tell me he's not a biased guys in the ACC office against Duke? Make your minds up. Are they getting screwed, or are they getting handled with kids' gloves? You can't, you know, say people are against them, people are for them, and change your you know, directional arrow from the wind every time a story comes up. So that doesn't make any sense either. So I agree with everything else. It was unfortunate. They couldn't. I don't think it was prime for them to play their best game. You know, as soon as I started watching it, I thought the same thing. The announcers mentioned it. Franny and Dan talked about it. It's again, it's no excuse. Nobody's making an excuse, but it's a legitimate explanation. But then the other speculation part, I think, was just crazy. They're trying to screw Duke. I mean, everybody pissed and moaned for years that Duke got every break, and that suddenly the coaches can call and change TV schedules. No, they can complain about it and probably get away with complaining about it more than the newbies on the block. But changing the schedule for Mike, I mean, that's not how they work, because there's only one thing that's more powerful than superstar coaches, and that is television. That's just the reality.
And money.
That's exactly right, because they give them money, and they like to get that money. So, you know what strikes me? That's another thing that popped into my head, that it's got to be an example of it, I think. I mean, here's what I'm talking about. When Louisville was playing in Conference USA, and I guess the Metro, I guess I started doing their games when they were still in the Metro. And, you know, when we would go on the road, like a trip like this, you know, you would be, this is what we used to do at the small college level, but they were doing it at this level, is, you know, the game's at night, so obviously you can't just check out of your room at checkout time at like 11 in the morning and then have your guys have to just wander around. Although we used to have to do that sometimes at the small college level, and you'd have to someplace to take them to a mall. rather than have them sit around all day, and you had to get out of the room. So, you know, that was how it worked. But I remember when I first started doing the Louisville games, they would do a modification, which, again, if you had a little extra money at the small college level, you could do. You know, we have probably, oh, I don't know, two times, that's it would be, I got to do the math in my head here, probably, I don't know, 16 rooms or so, I guess. I think that's about right, probably. The players have roommates, and I think some of the managers this do, and the coaches that don't, and the broadcasters don't. We're lucky we're spoiled that way. So maybe it's 20 rooms, okay? But they have to book 20 rooms for 2 days because they don't make you get out. Back then, what they would do is, you had probably the same number of people broadcasting, but they would only keep 2 rooms for the second day, and everybody was supposed to bring their bags to keep them in the 2 rooms until you got ready to leave for the game, and then you put them on the bus. And you know, the people who wanted to hang around those rooms would do that. It wasn't the most comfortable, because you know, you had literally like 10 people in a room, which is, they're not built for that, and they weren't staying like at the Ritz-Carlton. I mean, those leagues, I remember one time, I still remember this because it makes me laugh out loud every time I think about it. Rick had just come excuse me, from you know, pardon me again, from the NBA. And obviously, you're playing in Boston and New York and Philly and Los Angeles and major cities, and they always stayed, like, you know, when we went to play Boston College, they stayed in the hotel that the Knicks would stay at when they played the Celtics, and it's a Ritz-Carlton. And then you come into this league, and they were playing East Carolina. I'll never forget it. And they were supposed to be staying at like a Best Western or something. If you have stock and or you're a big fan of Best Western, I'm not knocking it per se, but I mean, come on, as Yubi would say. I mean, come on, you're talking about Best Western against the Ritz-Carlton, you know, one of those deals. So they were supposed to play East Carolina, and they were supposed to stay. There isn't a lot of hotel choices in Greenville, North Carolina. So they had booked Louisville in like a Best Western or something. And I'll never forget this. He made a special appeal to the conference office that there was a rule in the league. You had to go the night before. So they avoided, you know, if it was a TV game and all of a sudden bad weather comes in, you can't get in. Now the game's got to be canceled or postponed, or what do you do about forfeits and all that? So they wanted to make sure you were there. So we were all supposed to go the night before. And he got special permission not to go until the day of the game, which is okay. You know, when I coached a league in Sweden, I was amazed at that. They did that all the time. They would fly, and we wouldn't even get hotels. We'd fly, we'd land, we'd get to the game, we'd play it, and then we'd go back to the airport. Now, that was a little crazy, but they was trying to save pennies, too. So this one, they at least got a hotel, but they, and you had to stay, you know, when you would, if you flew commercial, you were going to have to stay overnight, but now they chartered. So they would charter. So you got permission from the league to go the day of, but then Actually, he did get a hotel. I forgot. So we landed there, and I'm telling you, if he'd had his way, forget, we wouldn't even gotten the hotel. We would have dressed on the plane, landed the plane in the parking lot at the arena, played the game, gotten back on the plane and go home. He didn't want any part of staying at the Greenville Best Western, whatever the hell it was. I mean, he was so obviously disgusted by that. He was smart enough, he wasn't going to say anything and make fun of it or anything, but it was, he wanted no part of that. So I laughed about that.
Did you even check in?
Yeah, I went to the hotel. We checked in. Nobody, you know, it wasn't even time for a nap or anything. You just went to the room, sat around, you know, diddled around on your phone or your computer for an hour and a half. And then we went and ate pregame, then went to the game, flew home. So it was, they paid for a room. Nobody slept in it. But, I mean, I'm telling you, if he could have eliminated that step, he would have. I swear, if they had a big enough parking lot where he could have, like, listen, we'd be okay if we just landed out there by the West Gate. Yeah, sure, bring it in, Rick. He was like, that was, and I've said that. And I don't want to make too big a deal because I don't like to be hated, and I have great respect for the Big 12. You've heard me singing its praises, but that's got to be weird. I said this to the guys I did the game with the other day, that, like, I mean, because the Big East was basically all teams playing in NBA arenas, they were staying in all NBA facilities, most everybody was. And so, you know, you're in the Big 12, which is arguably the best basketball league in the country right now, but those schools are not in, you know, what you'd consider major metropolitan areas. Ames, Iowa, you know, places like that. And so, you know, it was okay. It wasn't, you know, they do a good job, ESPN's travel department, vetting, for lack of a better word, the hotels that we're in. So we're not staying in dives, but it's certainly a far cry from, you know, the Waldorf or the Ritz-Carlton or any place like that. And so I always wonder, like, we got there at the arena the last game at the same time Kansas's bus was pulling up. And so they were walking to go down. You go under the arena to go where the coaches are. We were going up that ramp to go in the arena. And I called down to Bill Self, and we had a quick chat. And that's when it crossed my mind. I mean, here's a guy. I wonder if he was staying at our hotel. We were, the hotel choices were like a Best Western, a Courtyard by Marriott. They're not bad. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going, look at this spoiled brat. No, by any stretch. But, I mean, Bill Self's in the Hall of Fame. He's a multi-gajillionaire. I imagine when his family travels, they probably stay in those kinds of places. And so the whole league, I mean, what choice do you have? You're in, there is no Ritz-Carlton in Ames, Iowa, or in Oklahoma City, or in Norman, Oklahoma. I mean, they're fine places. There's places to get a good meal, but it's not exactly, you know, when you were at the top of your game in the Big East, you were at the top of everything. You were staying in the best cities, in the best hotels, in the best arenas for the best basketball league in the country. You're in the Big 12, you're in the best basketball league in the country, traveling and staying in middle-of-the-road hotels in cities that are maybe clean and safe, but that's not generally what. Hey, let's go to where do you want to go on vacation? I don't care, as long as it's clean and it's safe. I don't care if they have casinos or shows or things to do. I just want clean and safe. Well, hell, we can go stay in Bardstown. I mean, is it qualified, Bardstown, clean and safe? I think it is. So, I mean, it's just,
yeah, I think it's
a very weird dynamic. But I still remember that East Carolina trip like it's yesterday, because I literally laughed out loud. And they won, so they didn't have to apologize to anybody for doing what they did. But, yeah. It's a trip, all right. The dynamics of travel and but anyway, that's the point I'm making. How much money? I mean, they paid attention to that stuff. I remember one trip, I got something like room service for like $10 or something, and I just forgot. You know, you're not supposed to charge anything to the rooms, because that's your business if you want to get something extra. And so I just forgot, and they called me. They wanted the $10, and I don't blame them. But it was probably not even U of L. It was probably the team that had the rights to the games back then, Nelligan. But the point is now, I mean, you know, they're staying, all these rooms booked for two nights, and not quite as much of a every penny concern as there was back then, because there's a lot of that money, and there's a lot of that money because they get teams like Duke to play Monday night right after they play Carolina on Saturday. That's the way of the world. So that's what that was all about. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Thanks for being with us. It's a Tuesday on ESPN 680 105.7.
Metro College is a program that helps students pay for tuition, and I didn't believe it. You have to work third shift 5 days a week. It's a great and rewarding thing when you graduate. I would do it all over again, just like I just did.
You know those buddies who magically become medical professionals when you're not at the top of your game? The ones who say,
"Come on, muscle through it,"
but then also say,
"Hey, you should probably see my specialist,"
or surgery or pain meds. It's almost always false, false, and false. Athletico's physical therapists, the same therapists who work with professional athletes, can tackle those little aches and pains from the start before they become big ones. So next time, don't believe everything you hear. Instead, start with Athletico. Schedule your free assessment at athletico.com.